same again this morning. It's good to be here with you this morning to worship the Lord with you. Enjoyed the service so far. Enjoyed all of the different parts of our service, the Sunday school, the singing, the devotions, and everything. I know we studied in our Sunday school lesson this morning. In our case, the baptismal class, we didn't, but the rest of you did in the resurrection. And I also want to just continue with a few things about the resurrection. I didn't feel like I should preach anything different. And I'd like to just maybe give just a few words about the history of it and the significance of the resurrection and what it means to us today. You know, there's some interesting things. I think you're in John 20. And John, I'm just going to use it a little bit as a reference again. But Mark wrote only just a very short few words about the resurrection. I think he wrote about 10 verses. And then Matthew was next. And Luke wrote, I think, 53, if you count all the way to the end of the resurrection story completely. But John, he had the most. And it's kind of interesting that he did. But there's a few things that I just thought would be nice to bring to us attention. For one thing, in the Gospels, much attention is given to the resurrection. It's surprising that there's a lot of the story is given from beginning to end. And so it must have some really significance for us today. One of the first things it says here that just stuck out to me, I was just going to give a few words about the history of it, the story of itself. And to me, this story, I'll just go back to this. This story in the resurrection is just filled with, what would you say, drama, excitement of a story that is just so amazing story to start with. But one of the first things that sticks out, it says that on the first day of the week cometh Mary when it was yet dark. Well, it had to be after 6 o'clock to be the first day of the week. And this morning my eyes were opened at 6:11 and it was just starting to get daylight. And, of course, we're further north than they were, so I suppose that it was almost dark then at 6 o'clock or shortly after. One place it says that as the sun started to rise, I think it was just the words described there. I still believe it was very early when it was still dark when this took place. And in this story, and I'm sure that you discussed some of this, there's a lot of details, and it's even hard for many people to put this all together, to be exactly sure when Peter came, when John, and when the women, and all of that. It's a little some different things that took place there, but this thing that it was the first day of the week and early in the morning is interesting because it had to be after 6 o'clock to fulfill the prophecy that says that on the third day he should rise. If indeed, and some people, and I'm not sure that I'm really hard on this, but if indeed he was crucified on Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock, it says at eventide, but before six in the evening, he was in the grave 3 days, or one place it says on the third day he rose again. It had to be after 6 o'clock to be the next day. In the Jewish calendar, or how would you say, and how they reckon days. It needed a partial day was counted as a day. You just say, well, the next day. And even though it was just maybe 15, 20 minutes after the first day. But you do have to remember that Jesus arose before Mary Magdalene and the other women came. He had to rise before that. But nevertheless, we believe he did. So this explains the 3 days. There's some other things that stuck out to me was just some interesting things about this. Is Pilate told the Jewish, he says, make it as sure as you can. That's interesting to me. He said, do anything you want to. You have the money, you have the resources, you see to it that nobody gets away with anything here. And the chief priests, they had good memory. They said, hey, we remember this man said that on the third day he's going to rise. So something struck out to them that they remembered that. It, to me, that makes them guilty that they didn't see Jesus when he came. It's because they were focused on this man. He said the third day he'd rise again. And so anyway, the other thing that, and they were given large sums of money. That was interesting to me too, that he said that the soldiers were going to get it large sums, not just a little $5 bill, but $500, whatever it took. So because they wanted to hide this thing. But these very people, these very soldiers, which says it calls them one place the keepers, it says that the keepers did shake. You remember the case of Belshazzar when he saw the handwriting on the wall, it says that his knees clapped together. It says, and they became as dead men. Just became as dead men. They were so scared that they didn't care if they took a chance to go see the chief priests and be killed because of letting somebody get by. They didn't care. They were dead men as far as they were concerned. There's another little tidbit that is so interesting to me is this is in Luke, where it talks about the two men on the way to Emmaus. It says that they were talking evidently on the way to Emmaus, and then Jesus came up behind them, and then he told them they were talking about it, and then they said, haven't you heard, when he sort of questioned them, haven't you heard what took place? And Jesus said, what things? To me, it's sort of interesting because just those words, what things? And then it says unto them, they said that there was this prophet. They didn't say that the Christ died. They said the prophet. And it's just an amazing thing because this was the very Son of God walking with them. They didn't recognize him. And Jesus intentionally made so they didn't recognize him. Anyway, in this case, Jesus said then, he said he came from Moses and all the prophets, and he explained it during this time. And it was getting dark when they got there. And then Jesus opened their eyes. I think you all know the story. But another interesting thing to me was it's 7 miles back to Jerusalem. It was dark, and it was from what I understand, it's a little old path through the mountains, and they took off. This would be walking from here to Bonner's Ferry in the night. They were so excited what took place. Anyway, these are some very interesting things that struck me, and I'd like to give just a few other words. Maybe I'll turn to Philippians 3. I think you know the verse. You can go if you want to. But it says, Paul says, that I might know him and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his suffering, being made conformable unto his death, if by any means I might attain unto the resurrection of the dead. That's a very interesting verse, and it applies to this very thing. This word in Philippians, the word power, is a word that's different than the power, for instance, where it says in Ephesians, it says far above all principalities and power. But this word is more powerful than that word. It is a strong word, and it emphasizes force of miraculous ability and divine strength. But the question, I'm going to switch just a little bit here, that the question to us today is, do any of you doubt the power of Jesus, the Son of God, to rise from the dead? I don't. I don't have the slightest little doubt about that. I doubt if any of you do, hardly at all. and all power was given unto him on heaven and on earth. And so he did what nobody else has ever done or could even do, is to rise from the dead without any help. And why not? I mean, if you can believe in Jesus, that he's the Son of God, why do you even doubt this? And even a little time before his death, Jesus said this in John 11, it says, or John 10, I lay down my life that I might take it again. No man taketh it from me, not Pilate, not the Jews, I'm adding this, not the soldiers, nobody could do it. It says, but I lay it down of myself. I have the power to lay it down, and I have the power to take it up. That's the power we're talking about. And to me, there is no doubt that he could do that. I don't even doubt that. I don't know if I have to even give proof of the resurrection. And I'm not planning on doing very much of it, but enough for us to renew our, because this is the greatest miracle that Jesus ever done. He raised Lazarus from the dead, but this is him raising himself from the dead. He was dead and gone, as far as we're concerned, or as far as man is concerned. That's not really a truth, but he was able to, a dead man raising a dead man himself, an amazing thing. You know, on the third day, as we were talking about, there was a rope on the tomb, probably from the top to the bottom, just a rope, and it, according to what we believe happened there, is they put a wax seal on the bottom of the rope. So the rope is there. Nobody could take this away unless that rope was removed. And on the pain of death, anyone that would remove it, and no man alone could move the stone by itself. It had to be several people. And to assure this, a group of battle-hardened soldiers of the Roman army guarded through the night, and if any of them would sleep, that would be it would mean death for them. They guarded with swords and spears and everything, but nothing could keep Jesus down, nothing. When the appointed time came, he arose no matter what, and that power was so powerful. And even the disciples were somewhat bewildered. But the actual, the proof of the resurrection for us, if we'd have any doubt, if we believe in the Son of God, why should we have doubt? But nevertheless, maybe it would prove to us that this was the Son of God because of this great miracle. Different people, and this particular, well-educated man said this about it. His name is Wilbert Smith. He says, no founder of any great religion would dare to predict that I would rise the third day and then do it. But Jesus of Nazareth was no ordinary man, no common man. There was never any doubt that he had the power and the keys to hell and death. It's just so. These are my words, not his words. Shortly I'm going to give this man's words, which I had earlier. But this is what he said, that Jesus did indeed rise from the dead is a historical fact, as secure historical evidence as can be made, said this particular scholar. Okay, so why is it important that Jesus rose from the dead? Well, we really don't doubt that. Why do we? Why it's so important about that? His body was physical body, but his home was in heaven, the spiritual realm. But I want to say this. The demonstration of this power is so comforting to us today. That's part of the reason why. There's more reasons. The powerful, reassuring message of a great hope in heaven for us. That's so great for us. And the resurrection in the last day, that we will rise in the last day. You know, the tomb is empty. And nobody could ever do anything about that. No skeptics, nobody could do anything about it. Today the tomb is empty. It was emptied. The body is gone. I know that Jesus was, he came as a man, but the body is gone. It's forever gone. You know, Muhammad is dead in the grave. And we know the place where he's buried. Abraham's bones are in the cave in Machpelah in Israel today. And it's an interesting side story on that is, that this tomb is guarded day and night and has been. Nobody even knows what's in this tomb, but they know where the tomb is at, Abraham's tomb. But the tomb built by Joseph of Arimathea, where Jesus was entombed for 3 days, is forever empty. That's so great. It's a glaring and a vivid reminder of our hope that we don't die like a dog. No, this is the crowning hope, and that's why we're here today, the crowning hope of the Christian hope today. We know that this is the greatest miracle that Jesus could have done, and it was the greatest of all. Anyway, this by itself proves to us that he was the Son of God, that he was able to do this. And it's clearly demonstrated, I repeated this again, that we can live beyond the grave. That's part of that's the other part of the reason that is so important to us today. To me, it would be terrible if I would think that, and I know some atheists say that they like this idea that they're going to die like a dog and it's all going to be over with and it's nothing after that. But it's to me, I would like to see all of my relatives across the grave, and I'd like to, that's just a very small part. I'd like to see Jesus, and I would like to believe there's something beyond this, and that we will all rise again someday by the command of the Lord, who has power unspeakable. Those that are buried, those that have been incinerated and cremated, and have even people before the flood, all of those are going to rise again in one way or another. And there's the people that are buried before the flood are buried, many people believe, a kilometer below the dirt that we have today, because most people believe the flood covered with sediments up to a kilometer thick average across the world. They're all going to come. Those that are missing in the sea, everybody's going to come and meet the Lord Jesus, as our hope is that we do, some to righteousness and some to unrighteousness. I had to think of this here. About a month ago, I went to my last uncle, to the funeral of my last uncle. And the grave site was about 2.5-3 miles north of they had the funeral at the house. Went up there and they buried him. And I was after the burial. I had to walk around the grave, and there was my grandpa and my grandma. They were the graves were right side by side. They were buried when I was about 16 years old, 55 years ago. There's their tombstone. There was already moss on the tombstone. Another corner of the graveyard was my mother's sister, who was my dad's first wife. He didn't have any children. There was a little old grave there. 70 years ago, more than that, probably 80 years ago, there was this little grave there in that lonely, windswept graveyard. There was no trees around. I just had to think, yeah, all of these are going to come from the grave, and they're all there. They sang this song in German. I couldn't understand all of it, but it was a very interesting song, because as it was standing by the graveside and singing, they were singing about the man from the grave was speaking out of the grave to the people on the ground yet alive. He was telling them to get ready for this particular time. It's very appropriate for such a time. As powerful as glorious it is for us for the physical part of the resurrection, this verse that I read in Philippians has a spiritual reality. The resurrection of a dead spiritual man to a live one. And Paul talks about this in verse 11. He says, if any means I might attain unto the resurrection of the dead. Now he was talking in a spiritual sense. And he's talking of that resurrection, and one that we want to for sure partake of in the right way. We're going to partake of both the first and the second resurrection, if we like it or not, it'll take place. And I like it, of course, and so do you, but there's people who do not believe in that. And he yearns to attain unto the resurrection of the life with Jesus, who is raised from the dead physically, and thereby also typifies our spiritual resurrection. In Ephesians 2, it says that we were all dead in trespasses and sin. You know, at the tomb of Lazarus, talking about the resurrection of our spiritual body, Sister Martha says, Jesus had told her that he's going to rise again. And she says, I know that my brother will rise again in the resurrection of the dead at the last day. But then Jesus said this in John 11, I am the resurrection and the life. Now he that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. And whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die. Now, there's a key verse, a key word in this that I want to really emphasize this morning. Don't forget, it doesn't say that he that believeth in me shall never die. It says he that liveth and believeth in me. And there's a big difference. In a moment, I want to just say a few words about that. That there is a new life. He that liveth and believeth, it's a resurrection within that takes place. I'm afraid there's a lot of people who want to take part in the physical resurrection. I'm talking about eternal resurrection in heaven. But they're only mildly interested. And I want us to really look at ourselves, make sure that we're not only mildly interested in the resurrection that Jesus talked the resurrection of the physical body to heaven, but into the living the life of Jesus in our life today. Ray Comfort, I think many of you know Ray Comfort, is a converted Jew, and he writes in several books, and I think there's some videos of him, talking to atheists. And he says, he persuaded his friends to come to the Lord. He says he harassed them. I think he used the words harassed, but he just was so excited to find the Lord that he just pushed and pushed him. And finally they found the Lord. They did. But he says, in the end, 90% of them became disinterested and just fell away, didn't do anything. 90% of those. Then he says that he himself, actually, before he found the Lord in the true sense, that he went to church, he attended church, he believed in God, he believed in Jesus, and he wanted to go to heaven, and he wanted to be in the resurrection, but he had not committed, he had not surrendered, he had not followed, he had not loved, he had not obeyed the Lord. He didn't liveth and believeth in him until one day. He found the Lord in the true sense. He changed his life completely after he recognized that it's a lot more than just an easy believism. And so I hope that we all have really adopted, and all of the words I just described a few seconds ago, surrendered and followed and truly believed and lived the life of Christ. Because less than that isn't going to cut it. It's not going to make it. So the real meaning of the resurrection that we talk about here is the power that Paul wanted to know. He wants to know the true meaning of this in the sense of being acquainted with and be partaker of the resurrection of Jesus. A changed life. You know, on the resurrection day so long ago, Mary was weeping and in despair outside the empty tomb, yearning for the Lord that had the power and the keys of everlasting life. And she thought that she had him. She thought that he had him, and she did have him. She didn't realize that he wasn't gone. But she was so anxious for that. Paul says, if by any means, and there are means, Paul says this, Now, in Revelations I'm going to turn to that just so I get that right. Revelations 26, it talks about the very thing that I'm trying to describe this morning. Two resurrections, just in bringing this thing to a head here. It says, blessed and holy is he that has part in the first resurrection. On such, the second death has no power. But they shall be priests of God and of Christ and shall reign with him 1,000 years. Blessed and holy is he that have first resurrection. And that's talking about the new birth. It's talking about that death won't have any hold on us, not in the sense of any meaning to it. We'll go to be with Jesus and be in everlasting joy and splendor. You know, Mary was weeping at the side of the tomb because she was so anxious. Peter came running with all his might to the resurrection. And I think that, I know they were doing it maybe physically, but we need to run. We need to weep in front of the tomb because that's where our hope is. That's where our future will be if we really want eternal life. So anyway, I want to leave this with you that let us strive like Paul strove and wants to attain unto the resurrection, the first resurrection, where the second, where the death has no part, and we can take part in the last resurrection, second one. I'm going to close with that.